Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila. Among the many questions and comments I get from listeners is, where'd you get the name Yeshiva Shalmaila? And the answer is, Reb Moshe Shapiro stayed here for Shabbos by us. One of the last two Shabbosim, he was in America. He stayed here twice. And he suggested the name a few times, a few years ago, as well as recently. He said it's a virtual yeshiva. He said, give it the name, the Yeshiva Shalmaila. Now, this week's topic, we're going to be speaking about should parents be sending their kids to a high school that does not have reading, writing, and arithmetic, the three R's, and are they handicapping them for life? I had one listener who told me a parent who sends their kid to high school without reading, writing, arithmetic is over. Or Makabeyeu Baseser. I mean, the kids are 13, for heaven's sakes. What do they know? At 13, think back. What did you know? Now, I'm not going so far, but we've certainly got a lot of comments. We put almost all of them up on the website, except for those that we get people who say things that they shouldn't be put up on the website. But a lot of passionate response, which is wonderful. I often quote the tshuva from the great Baal Ligros Moshe, says that a person has the right, if he has a raya or a teretz, to argue on anybody. He says to Adam Pashas, who is writing the greatest pesach who will ever live in the Western Hemisphere until Mashiach comes, he says, of course you should argue with me. So I enjoy and I appreciate the passionate comments, and even those who say like nasty things, I don't take it personally, bless you all. So does it make a difference, high school? Now, I'm not talking about necessarily biology, because most of us are not going to become physicians and recoil at the sight of blood, or necessarily science. I'm talking about, let's say, just the basics for the purpose of this. You have many yeshivas, they don't teach anything. The kids can't write, they can't read. So I figured, what do I know? Right? I'm just an observer. I see Nebuch, all the tzedakah cases, the people who are struggling so miserably to earn a living. So I figured, what did we do? We went to the two people I know who are Isaac full-time in this field, substantially. One is Gedalia Weinberger, who is the head of PCCS in Lakewood, which has graduated thousands and thousands of people who he's put on either to accounting or computers, where they earn a very respectable parnassa. He trains them. And he will be speaking about, we had him last week, but I will replay the clip where he talks about how they stopped, for the most part, taking people who didn't go to high school. PCS, the learning curve is too much. And who's the other person? We got in Eretz Yisrael. We tracked him down. The head of the Machon HaParnassa, Dr. Alan Kadish. Machon HaParnassa is in Borough Park. It also has thousands and thousands of students, most who come from a very weak high school background, who talks about its effect on Parnassa as well. So let's go to the experts instead of, like I like to say, Reb Nachum, and the Miroids used to say, what's aid me pa this puzzle? He says, devas vei zaktish, devas zakt vei snish. It's hearsay. Let's go to the people who really deal with it. Now, we put together a small collage of the callers. You can skip over this if you don't like, but we got a lot of comments. We took the highlights of some of the, I don't know, 50 or 100 calls that we got on this.
Uriah from the studies is no shaykhah. The studies is a guy that the other option is not being in high school at all, not being in yeshiva. Meaning, if a guy ditched high school, didn't go to college, didn't go to any high school, dropped out on the street, yes, he has no chance to make money. Guys that dropped out with yeshiva is way different than a guy dropping out to high school and on the street.
Sure, you're aware that today all these stuff are a lot less negaya with all the technology. You don't have to know math. You don't have to. You can just talk into the phone and it prints it for you. So all these stuff are a lot less negaya. And everyone knows that people who learn Gemara know the things a lot better. I know of now five Haimisha guys, like in between Mitzvah and Chassidus, who did not learn English at all, probably in Cheder even not, who are going to school now to become doctors, and they cream the rest of the class every test, even though these guys are in college their whole life.
Hi, Rabbi Lichtenstein. I just wanted to ask you, I'm just wondering, you had a whole speech and a whole show about English. I know you always say that Moshe is the place to Qatar in America. I don't know how, I know you're a big Talmud Chacham, how did you miss that Rav Moshe in Yerideya Beis, who answers it? I don't know how you conveniently skipped that out, and I'm sure you do know it because you're a big Talmud Chacham. So I'm just wondering, like, what happened to that Rav Moshe? It should be zero mention. Second of all, I'm wondering why, when you introduce a partial Schechter, you say that I'm sure you all know what his opinion is going to be. So you obviously do realize who's going to hold what. And third of all, I think you should stop worrying so much about parents crippling their children by not giving them the opportunity to take English courses, and worry more about the parents that overdose their kids on secular studies and giving them all types of iPhones and iPads and taking away their bechira and opportunity and crippling them from becoming a Talmud Chacham. I think that's a lot more of a serious issue to talk about and to worry about kids at 12, 13 who I'm personally involved with in the school, and I do see what's going on in 7th and 8th grade with the more modern parents that are giving their kids all sorts of tablets and iPhones and access to internet and Xboxes. I think that's a lot bigger of a crisis to speak about than parents not giving their children English.
Yeah, hi. I'm trying to figure out why you are so busy in the previous show with general statistics in the whole world about high school dropouts. High school dropouts are exactly that. They're dropouts, and the reason why they're dropping out is because they obviously have low IQ. But from people, when they drop out, they're dropping out because they want to learn. So it has nothing to do with it. From people that drop out are of higher IQ, and therefore they could make up whatever they lost when they decide to go get a job.
I would like to comment with the whole thing about English, which, whether you agree or not, quoting studies were done of the success rate of people with a high school diploma without a high school diploma is really very inaccurate due to the fact that these studies were all done with Gaim and people who are many times on a lower intelligence level, and I think the average yeshiva buffer, I don't know where the that you got at UNCG, they can't do 5 times 5. I don't know if he's learning disabled or not, but I think your average yeshiva buffer, with or without English, could do 5 times 5, could do pretty well. And besides the fact that even with English education, the point of English education is merely to get a diploma, and most yeshivas don't really give any topic education that will help you in the world today. No yeshiva that I know of, any good yeshiva has computer courses or economics courses, which if they were actually, even the yeshivas that do have English, if they were out to teach you an illness, the things that they teach are pretty outdated and useless, and just to get you a diploma, and a diploma itself, I think, is pretty muskin, it's pretty useless. So I think quoting these studies is a very inaccurate way of...
Rav Moshe Feinstein in Yeridea, Pei Aleph, Pei Beis, Pei Gimel, speaks very strongly against secular studies. And they thought that, they said, why did you omit that? And I said, the way I read the tshuva is, Rav Moshe is talking about secular studies post-high school. So doubt was niggling me because it's somewhat vague. So we called up the Reb Reuven Feinstein yesterday to Rosh Hashiva, and we spoke to his Rebbetzin. And the first thing did the Rosh Hashiva go to high school? And he said, of course the Rosh Hashiva went to high school. I said, he goes to secular studies? He said, yeah, Rav Moshe sent him. I said, but what about, she says, oh, you're going to ask me about the famous tshuva about English. He says, that Rav Moshe was against it was post-high school. This is as of last night from, it was a double pashut because Rav Moshe had two high schools. He had both in the Sifta Teferes Yerushalayim, there was a high school. In Staten Island that he formed for the Mugah Erlich Abachram, there was a high school. His kids went to high school. His Einiklich went to high school. So Chas V'Shalom to say that he would do different than what he wrote in his Tshuvas. But I thought, being that a number of callers had commented on that, I thought it was important to comment. Now, last week I said, can we get somebody who could defend it? And we have a Reish Koyl, a Reish Chabur in BMG. Today he's the principal of Big Yeshiva. His name is Reb David Beda. He's a Machanech who does not send his kid to high school. And he will tell us why. Another topic we will talk about today is, we get a lot of calls. Are there things we should not be speaking about? Like here on this program, we speak about everything from surrogate motherhood to whether older single girls can have children, to addictions and alcohol addiction, gambling addiction, internet addiction, etc., as many other topics, mental health. And we got, you have no right to be speaking about it. This is, you know, we'll have a Chassidish Rav from Williamsburg, a Mashpia, a Rav Kahana. He's going to give us the Chassidish view on it. And then we're going to close off with Rav Moshe Brody, who actually established a machon to come out with textbooks that do not have anything objectionable, be it illustrations, be it theology, etc., that is Neged HaTorah, and he's selling them to yeshivas. It should be very interesting to hear his opinion. So we have a wonderful program. I would like to start off with a short verse. You know, we have this week Truma Tetzaveh, and then you have Vayakel Pikudei, which are all about the Mishkan. The first two are Vasisa, Truma Tetzaveh, and in the end it's Vayas, how they created the Beis Elohim, the Mishkan, which is both the metaphor, it talks about the actual Mishkan, but it's about the relationship with Kav Yachal. And remember, the house of Klal Yisrael, every Yiddish house is a Mishkan, and every person is also a Mishkan, Bolvavi Mishkan Evne. So the question is, between both halves, we have a terrible story, the biggest chait that ever happened, right? The chait to Egel, which the Gemara says that every time the chait to Egel is around forever, every time that there's some type of a punishment, it includes some punishment, a trace of it of the chait egel, whatever, certainly a most powerful chait. Why is it stuck right in middle of this construction of the Mishkan? And I saw one of the Sfarim write, he says, it's a lesson to us all. We want to build something beautiful. Be it a house, be it a dava makam kaddish, like a yeshiva, be it a relationship, a holy relationship, be something that some goal we have, and then we do something wrong. Something bad happens. We get set back. And it could be a really big setback where it says, Vayichar Af Hashem, where it causes a shvira of the luchais, where all our plans seem to be thrown and broken and trampled on, a big mistake, maybe something tamei, maybe something ra. And you know what the Torah says? Right afterwards, it goes to Vayakel Pikudei. Something bad happened. We pick up the pieces. We put the Shivrei Luchais in the Aron, and we just continue building the Mishkan. And it's certainly a story of my life. I don't know if it's a story for your life. How often we have setbacks where we just want to sit down and crumble or cry. And you know what? In the middle of the binyan HaMishkan, there's the Egel, and what is it? The Rabbi Nishalm says on the second binyan, Kashet Siva Hashem Es Moshe, all over Vayakel Pikudei is Kashet Siva Hashem Es Moshe. So if in something I'm doing or you're doing, in the middle some Egel pops up, and all its destruction and all the damage and the pain and the depression, you know what we do? We go and we make Vayakel Pikudei, and that's why it comes in this week's parshas. Which, just as a continuation, I heard of something, a beautiful Torah I want to share with you. We have this week the menorah. And you know, the menorah is the only kli from the Mishkan that we still have a remnant of. The Ramban in the beginning of Baruch Kaisei says that every Yiddish house on Hanukkah, according to what Ramban learns, the menorah from the Beis HaMikdash is in every home. And to a lesser extent, every shul has a menorah. The coins, the first coins we find, the Machzah Shekel had in the menorah. So the menorah almost seems to symbolize, you know, our relationship, Klal Yisrael. And the menorah was made miksha, was beaten out of one piece, which is interesting, because you have chakika. You have when they made the luchais, they carved them out, they engraved, there was psilis. They threw away the extra, whatever. Moshe took the extra of the sapphire, right? It was carved out. We have the concept of a pesel, where we take a stone and we discard all the left, and what comes out emerges as the statue. But miksha is different, and it says Moshe could not figure out the miksha. Niskasha Moshe. So Bezalel did it. And I heard a beautiful Torah from a chavrus of mine, right, the Grace of Baal Machshav, Reb Yitzchak, and he said, miksha represents when you take something and you don't lose anything. And no matter every part of it, somehow you're able to twist and hammer at every piece of it emits light. And what does that represent? It represents so many times we have a setback. We get angry or we get depressed and we say, oh, this is waste. It's not. Depression is a good time to do tshuva, to have charata, ziva sachet. Anger is a good time, says Lutzanis, kalat sinusa asura, chot milat sinusa davay dezara. Anger, you know, vayigval libay bedarki Hashem. It's a time to, every midah, so what does miksha mean? All those setbacks to be channeled into creating light. And Moshe couldn't do that, because what do we know about Moshe? It says, when Moshe v'yarisei tov nismala kalabayis ayra, it seems Moshe was born nismala bayis ayra, according to this chazal. He grew up as a prince, but Salil, he grew up in the shadows. Gam kielech begate tzalmavis, the shadow of death, in the dark side. Somebody who was in the dark side, he could understand miksha, I know what it means, setback means. I know what darkness means. I know what depression means. I know what anger means. I know what disappointment means. I know what gaiva and taiva, I know what all of that means. But on miksha, I know how to turn that into positive energy too. So if you're feeling like you're having a bad time or a bad day or something, you know what? What's our avodah miksha? How do we turn it into something positive? Before we go to our guest, I would like to give a little bit hagdama on the topic of Lalamda Umnes, which we discussed last week. Because and you'll hear this throughout the conversations, but I would like to take a few minutes just to lay it out. Many of us have heard it, but I think I put it together. The Bryson Kiddushin and Daf Chav Tes says, a father's chiyuvim ala son, he has to bimal him, he has to, and one of them is Lalamda Umnes. Right? And Reb Yehuda says, if you don't teach your son an umnes, you're teaching him how to be a thief. Because what's going to happen? He's going to have to feed his family. He's going to have to eat himself. Now, here's another Gemara. The Gemara in Kedushin and Daf Pebe says, Reb Meir says, La'olam yilmeid b'noi umnes kalo nekia. Teach your son something kalo nekia. Reb Nuroi says, this is the famous Reb Nuroi, seemingly, he would argue. So the Marsha in Kiddushin, and Af Chavtes says, no, Avadi's not arguing, because he quotes the Mishnah in Avis. Kol Torah she'eni ma'malacha, seifa betela. So he says, what is Reb Nuroi saying, eni malam b'ni el Torah? He sort of twists it a little bit. He twists Reb Nuroi's arm. He says, Ella, he says, you should make melachte aroi v'terasei kva. So he says, Avada Reb Nuroi doesn't argue, and he says, chayiv lamed b'nai umnes, but he says it, right? But it means make your Torah kva. It's really not mashmedis, honestly, in the lashon of Reb Nuroi. But he says, even the chsidim rishainim asu terasei kva o melachte aroi. Now the Makna, the Baal Hafla, the great Pirish on Kiddushin, he says a different thing. He says, Rav Nuroi is talking about somebody who is such incredible emunah in Hashem, who wants to be saimach on a nes. He says, if you want to be saimach on a miracle, right? He says, that is Rav Nuroi. But he says, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara in Brachas, it says, there was a machlokes, Rav Shimon bar Yochai, should a person make, terasei umnasai and not be mekayim vasafta de ganecha? There's a machlokes in the Gemara. So Rashbi said that, yes, a person does not have to be mekayim asafta b'ganech, and Rabbanim Shimon will take care of you. So what does the Gemara say? Harbu asu kein v'loy ol sabiyadim. They couldn't live on miracles. So the Makna says Reb Nuroi and Rashbi are both talking about people who want to be saimach on the nes. So take it down to more modern generations. Let's skip a few hundred years. And we come to the great Briskarov, who says, Avada, Reb Nuroi and Reb Meir do not argue, because Reb Meir and Nuroi were the same person. So what does he say? He says very similar, and the Kovitz Shurim says the same thing. Reb Yashia brings it lahalacha. The Kovitz Shurim was asked, what do we do? We know Olam Chayiv Adam Neomnes, and you haven't had Reb Nuroi. What is the great Kovitz Shurim? And the Kovitz Shurim had the great yeshiva of Baranovich, where they did not teach him this. And he was the greatest yeshiva in Lithuania. Everybody who went to Mir or Brisk, all the Mitzuyanim, learned by Rabbi Chanan. And Rabbi Chanan was a great kanoi. Right? What does Rabbi Chanan write? He says, Avada, we paskin chayiv adam labanei umnes. He says, only by Bias HaMashiach will we be able to live without umnes. He says, Reb Nuroi is talking about those elef nichnas ve'echad yaitza, the yechidim who will light up the world with their Torah. He says, avada, those do not have to be malamed b'nai umnes. What is it? So that seems to be the conclusion of almost all paiskim. We will bring one or two shitas that argue. And what is the Shulchan Aruch? Shulchan Aruch in Shinvav in Hilchos Shabbos says, you're allowed to hire a teacher for your children on Shabbos, umnes, a math teacher. Why? Because it's a mitzvah, a dvar mitzvah you're allowed to do. And the same thing in Makkos, it says, if a person hit his son who doesn't want to study, who doesn't want to learn umnes, he doesn't go to Gullus because he's doing a dvar mitzvah. And the Rambam paskins like this in Hilchos Shabbos, the Turdar Chaim Kufnun Vav brings Yafa Talmud Torim Derech Eretz, and what is the in Kufnun Vav sort of to be the grab all at the end of, you know, and Haggas Ad Baboiker, so it says after you finish Shachris and learning, you go out to work. So he says if you have to go to work, the Torah says, because if not, poverty is maver a person al das kainai, makes a person angry at the Rabbeinu Shalalom. The Magen Avraham in Kufnun Vav brings Chayiv Adam Labnei Yonis. Now here are a few outliers, shitas. And by the way, Yeshua says the same thing. When he explains Reb Nuroi, he says, Reb Nuroi is saying, is in Bnoi Molech Uzariz, if you have an exceptional son, he's the son who does not have to go. But everybody else has to teach his son in Umnis. Reb Yashiv in Kaivitz Chuvis, we'll put this on our website, with all our Mar Makayev's Yerideya, Simin Kuflamites, brings Reb Chanan as a pashtus when he was asked, if somebody should teach his son in umnes. There are many, many other Gemaras. The Gemara in Bab Metzi and the Aflamed Beis, when it says, V'haydat alohem ze beis chayeyem, so Rashi says, it goes on the G'dayli Hador, that was to Jaws, l'lmoid lehem umnes l'sparnes. Right? So this seems to be, now who are some of the exceptions? The exception that I would find, even the great Nefesh HaChaim, by the way, when the Nefesh HaChaim brings Reb Nuroi, he says, Harbu asu came v'lo yalsu b'yadam. He brings Reb Maimon Reshbi. He says, when you're talking about the Harbe, the masses, he says over there, lo yalsu b'yadam. But avada for yechidim, yechide skula, of course, we always have to have the great luminaries. Now, interesting, here are a few exceptions. Reb Moshe Feinstein says, given that there is such a need for abeim today in Malamdim, he says, if you teach your son Tyra, he has a job. He's going to become a Rebbe. The Meiri seems to see the same thing as well. He says, let him become a Machanach, become a Rebbe. This is a Gris Moshe, a Rede, a Lamed Vav. So he says, since when Noig today to be teach? Now, so the question is, well, unfortunately, Rabbeim jobs, if you ask many schools, they'll tell you every time a position opens, there are 25, 50, or if it's a high school, it could be 100 applicants for one job. So we have to question, Reb Moshe wrote this, you know, 50, 70 years ago when there was, you know, a post-Holocaust where we needed Rabbeim desperately. I don't know, are there really Rabbeim jobs? So here is the outlier, the one who I was able to find who does not seem to hold, and it's the stipler writes, he was asked, the stipler writes, he says, La'olam yomidah demesbenai umnes kal nekiyah. So the stipler wrote, and I saw this in writing, I didn't see it, I saw it, somebody brings it. He says, the halacha is that if somebody's son died because of Mila, the second son, you don't have to. So he says, today we see that business, there's so few Yirei Shemayim in business. He says, so many people who are going to go out, they're going to become dishonest. They're going to leave the Yirei Shemayim. So he says, therefore, Bizman Azeh Chayiv Adam Lamed B'Nayum, this has changed. Interesting. He says, the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara, the Rambam, it's all changed because today the people, it seems, are unusually dishonest, which is very interesting. I remember learning the Gemara in Shabbos. It's like Kuf Yotesam at Beis, Kuf Lamed, Kuf Chaf. The Gemara says that when was the Beis HaMikdash Nechrav? Batla Mimenu Anshi Amana. When there are no more people with integrity. So the Gemara says, there were no more people of integrity. Gemara brings Kama Psukim that there were many Talmud Chachamim in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara in Daf Kuf Chaf says, no, Berchayve is Yerushalayim. There were no more businessmen with integrity. Everybody became a thief. Well, thieves. Like the Gemara, that's when Charev Yerushalayim. Similar like the Gemara says, Rav Yisrael Ganvei. There's two Pshatim in the Mefarshim. But Papashtis, right? So it seems 2,000 years ago, they struggled the same thing. A lot of dishonest business people. And notwithstanding that, the Gemara still says, 600 years later, Chayiv Adam L'Lamed B'Nayumnes. The same Gemara that says, Rav Yisrael Ganvei. So I just look at the great stipler, the great guy in the stipler Rav, who I saw so many times, and I bought his forum, and I went to him for brachas, and I say, really, today it's changed. It's just a chiddush. You don't see it elsewhere. And I'm showing that there are many Gemaras that talk about how Klal Yisrael, in the times of, the Nevi'im, etc., of Yerushalayim, were not such honest people. So, but that is the one outlier sheet that I was able to find. Okay, enough of me. Let's go to our wonderful guests. Again, I'd like to remind you, almost all the comments, almost all the emails you can find on our website. We've put almost them all. So if you send something in, you can go there. People listen, comment, etc. Let's go to our guests.
One of the Rosh Yeshiva, the two
Wait,
Rosh Yeshiva.
Define handicapped, Reb Gedalia. What is handicapped?
They can't multiply 5 times 5. How are you going to do something in accounting? How can you do some real estate when you have to deal with amortization and complex computations to find out if something is profitable or not? How can you deal in the world if you can't read and write English well?
So do you find that are they unable to complete the PCCS courses? Do they drop out? Do they take a simpler course in something more blue-collar? Like, what happens to them?
Yeah, well, listen, we don't let them in because we learned that those who don't have the right skill set to be able to complete the course would just be wasting their time and their money. So we do a lot of pre-screening, and those people who we think are not going to be able to make it, we don't say anybody that we will not let you in. We just really dissuade them from taking it because we don't think they're going to be able to succeed. And that's true whether we're teaching them computing, whether we're teaching them real estate investing, whether we're teaching them accounting. It carries out throughout, really. So many of them go. Some of them take blue-collar jobs, unfortunately. That really does happen. And then they're crippled all the time. And, some of them are existing on programs and various government support, and they are trapped in that because they just can't afford to get off them. And it's really a very sad situation, but that does happen.
We have on the phone with us, actually from Eretz Yisrael, from Israel. He's traveling, but he was so nice as to give us a few minutes. Dr. Alan Kadish, who is the head of Turo, and he is the president of Turo. He is also the head of Machon HaParnassa, in Brooklyn, which I believe it's in Borough Park, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, which is probably the single largest educator of those who are sort of marginally graduated from high school. And I figured Dr. Kadish, we are having a big debate, and I'm honestly a lot of it is hearsay for me as to whether high school education is necessary or not. And many people say, well, all the statistics about high school education being necessary, that those who don't go to high school earn far less in their lives than those who do go to high school, are by basically dropouts who are white trash, et cetera. But yeshiva guys who go on to learn and they go to Kol or they learn in Beis Medrash, they're equivalent of having like a doctoral degree. These statistics are not relevant. And we see both in the Hasidisha and the Yeshivisha world, people without a high school degree are equally matzliach or very matzliach. And I figured rather than just picking numbers out of the air or just listening to this one speech and that one speech, let's go to the people who have the best data and actually educate these people. Last week we had Reb Gedalia Weinberger of PCS. This week we have the honor of having you. Give us a little bit of data and your feedback on this topic.
So thank you for asking me once again to be on the show with you. It's always a pleasure. I don't have as much data, comparison data of different groups, because I can only tell you about the students who attend Machon HaParnassa. But let me start by saying the following. First of all, there's no question that there are people who are tremendously successful in the business world, in other worlds, and even in law school, who have not had a strong high school education. There's no question that that's true. Because there's a small subset of our community that's, Baruch Hashem, incredibly talented, and they pick it up on their own. And so for those people whom it's not clear you can identify in advance, for those select couple of percent, it's true you can be tremendously successful without a significant high school education. But our experience has been that for the majority of students, I don't want to say average, but let's just say for the majority of students, getting to be in the 17 to 21 year age range without having basic skills in English, in math, and in communication really do hinder your ability to move forward. So in Machon LaParnassa, we have a very diverse student body, but we certainly have a significant number of students who have not had a strong secular high school education. And we actually have programs in Machon LaParnassa that teach them remedial math and remedial English. And many of the students who are motivated, who go through those programs, are able to succeed. But some of them certainly struggle. And so my feeling is that although the argument about financial data not being clearly present in this group may be somewhat true, my feeling from experience is that if we got students who had basic skills that they learned in high school, such as the students who go to other Touro campuses, their immediate success in college would be much better, and their long-term ability to succeed would also be better.
Now, Dr. Kadish, what about people who say, you know, if you're not going to college, which many of the Yeshivalite, I guess, won't go to because they come out of Kollel or the Chassidim, most of them don't go to college, and they say, look, I'm going to go into, I don't know, I'm going to open a store. I'm going to go into real estate. I need to know basic multiplication, basic division, have to know how to use a calculator, and I need to have a working knowledge of English, and all of the above can be acquired in elementary school. I mean, that's an interesting argument.
I think first of all, you need to know a lot more than multiplication and division if you're going to be in real estate or industries like that, as you well know. You need to understand interest rates, how to amortize things. It's far more than just multiplication and division. And the truth is, learning those skills in elementary school and then not using them for years basically means you don't remember anything. And this is anecdotal. I don't have strong data, but I can tell you in speaking to people who run very successful businesses in the Frum community, yes, you can open a shop without strong skills. But if you're going to be involved in a major business, you need to understand intermediate level math. You need good communication skills. And unless the venture is only going to be within the Frum community, you need to understand and have working knowledge of English. As I said, there's always going to be counterexamples of tremendously successful people who didn't have it, because they're the top 1 or 2%. But for most of us, those skills are important. If you look at the surveys that have been done about the level of education and earning power, even though they've not been published, the data do seem to suggest that even in the Hasidic and Yeshivish community, there's still a relationship between level of education and income. And so while there are anecdotal examples of people succeeding without basic skills, I don't think that that's true on a population basis. I think if you're going to succeed in a moderate way in the business world, you need to be able to communicate, you need to understand English, you need to understand something about the people you're doing business with, and you need not just basic arithmetic, but reasonable math skills, as that's become expected in business as things have become more advanced.
Now, Dr. Kadish, the long-term out for many, let's say, in the Hasidic community has been something like, you know, I'll get a job at B&H. So what would you say to, and I met a few Bachram last night who were giving me a real argument, high school is not necessary. What would you say to a 13, 14, 15-year-old who feels that English, secular studies are a joke, so therefore there's no reason to go for it? Give us a one line that you would tell that boy.
You haven't lived enough.
Would you
and
say
basically?
Yeah, go ahead, continue.
No, I mean, I think they're hearing this from other people, but without trying to be condescending, you know, a 13, 14, 15-year-old doesn't know what it takes to succeed. And so they're being told that this is worthless, that it's not necessary. It's the people who are telling them that that I think are making this mistake. I can't blame a 13-year-old who hasn't lived, has never had to pay a bill,
and
doesn't know anything.
And what would you tell the parents of such a person who's making the decision, because it's usually the parents who make that decision, decide not to send their 13-year-old to high school? What would you tell the parents of such a person?
I would tell them, I think you're making a mistake. And I would try to recount some of the things we've talked about and hope that without interfering with a bacher's chance to learn, without interfering with his level of frumkeit, that they would understand that to feel self-sufficient and proud of what you do and support a family, you need more than elementary school.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kadish, for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone from New Jersey, Rev. David Beda, who's was a Rebbe in Ma'or Yeshiva for many years. He's now the principal. He's a Talmud of Neri Yisrael. He was a Rosh HaChabura in Lakewood for a number of years. He learned in Lakewood for at least 7 years. So both an esteemed Mechanech and a Talmud Chacham. Welcome, Rabbi Beda.
Thank you.
So Rabbi Beda, what we are struggling with from both a Halacha and a Hashkafa point of view is that we know that the Gemara says that a person is supposed to teach his son in Umnis, the Gemara in Kiddushin and Daf Chavtes, and the Shulchan Aruch in Reish Mem Vav in Talmud Torah paskins that way, and in Hilchas Shabbos it paskins that way. You're allowed even hire a Rebbe on Shabbos to teach your kids in Umnis. It's in Hilchas Reitzeach, the Rambam brings it, in Hilchas Shabbos, the Rambam brings it. And it's also common sense. I mean, we see the way people who don't have an umnis of any type, and I'm not talking about those who are zeicha to become, you know, klei kodesh, but it says elef nichtas, 1,000 nichtas, ve'echad yaitza. Well, at least 900 of the others are not going to become klei kodesh, or 500 or 700, and many of them will struggle really miserably their whole lives if they don't have any tools at all. And we see it. We see, you know, the reliance on government programs that's done out of necessity, not out of choice in many of the cases, I would imagine. So mm-hmm. My question is, when people take a young boy and he's 13 years old now and they want to send him to a school that has no English, and we had on the head of PCCS, which is, you know, a program that I'm very involved in. I think I'm practically 90% of the private support of PCCS comes from me. So I clearly am very empathetic to the guys who come out of Kohl and struggle, don't know what to do.
Sure.
But we have Reb Gedalia Weinberger, who heads it, who says, we stop taking people who didn't go to high school because they're so far behind, we can't teach them even simple computers or accounting or real estate or insurance. They're reading and writing and arithmetic when you stop at 12 or 13 is just too deficient, if that's the way of some use it. So why would parents want to basically cut their children's arms off at such a young age?
Oh, yeah.
And particularly when the argument would be made is if somebody wants to become a mechanech, right? Speaking a good English, a Rosh Hashiva who gets up in front of a crowd and speaks in elegant English, it makes a Kiddush Hashem. And if he knows math, it'll help him in many places in Erevin and in Baba Basra, etc. So why would a parent want to do that to their child?
Okay. Let's take a step back. I do work in an institution that has a very strong secular department. We do believe in it. I'm a salesman of this commodity, which we call education, and I am, to a degree, a believer in it. At the same time, I have a son in 10th grade who is in a fine, upstanding mesifta in the Lakewood area that does not offer secular education. Personally, I'm fine with it right now, and I'll explain why. When we give kids an education, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, the things that they study, let's talk about an English class where they'll have 2 years of a Shakespeare novel, and they'll talk about Frankenstein, and that they'll spend time developing skills in literature beyond the simple reading, writing, and arithmetic. A complete, appropriate, secular education has a lot in there which, in my opinion, is valuable, but certainly not necessary to get yourself a decent job in the greater world out there. You can get a job just fine having never read Romeo and Juliet or Macbeth, etc. We do encourage kids to do well in all their courses, despite the fact that, let's talk about trigonometry for a second. You're not going to need trigonometry to be able to function in the real world out there. Even most kids are not going to need the trigonometry. Now, you have a guy getting married who doesn't know what 5 times 5 is not something that comes up through a legitimate high school education. Now, that's something which is supposed to have happened in 3rd grade or 4th grade. It's not something you need. Now, however, the education as we give it in our school is certainly valuable. And the reason why it's valuable is because it makes the individual more well-rounded. It makes the individual more of a thinker. They're able to produce more intellectually, which is extremely valuable. At the same time, that's something which a very strong base in Gemara can give the kid as well. So that, for example, my boy... Yeah.
Oh, wait, Rabbi Bader, let me go, because you're mentioning a lot of points. I don't disagree, and I think many people will agree, that there's no reason to read Hamlet necessarily or Romeo and Juliet. You could probably learn English in other places, right? But what that argument would be is that the solution is not to have high school. The solution is a better high school, which means a high school that's more focused, like you say. You know, even though I went to work, I did like the Shulchan Aruch and Reish Vav says, if you can try to learn a work, you should. But I will never use trigonometry in business unless maybe you're an architect. I don't know who uses trigonometry, honestly.
I think actuaries more than anybody else.
Actuaries. So, I mean, how many people become actuaries? So the argument would be yes. Is a lot of the curriculum that they teach in high school sort of wasteful? The answer is yes.
I never meant to say that.
I'm telling you, I would say that. I was not a big chassid of high school. And to be honest with you, the yeshiva where I went, I focused mostly on Limud HaKadosh, and I didn't do all that well in high school because it did not interest me. Calculus and trigonometry and geometry, I never met a triangle that was important to me, right? but I think the solution then is a high school that does teach things like, you know, reading well, but reading, vocabulary,
writing well,
public speaking, diction. I mean, let it teach the things that. And in a yeshiva, in Jersey schools, for certainly yeshivas, the high schools have a choice to make their own curriculum. Much they have far greater leeway than in New York,
there's
where you have regions.
Correct.
Good.
Yes.
So the solution is not to throw the baby out, but just to do it in a more appropriate way,
so
right?
My second son is in 9th grade right now, and he actually is enrolled in a mesifta in Lakewood that does offer, it's, I think, 4 times a week for 45 minutes. They get to math, they get to English, with the ultimate purpose of getting a GED so that there's some secular, something or other that you can point to, that they've had the basic training of reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's exactly what you've been talking about, of looking for this type of a hybrid, where at the same time, he is plugging away at Kittin. He is memorizing Dapim of Gemara, which will make him so much more of a honed thinker, so much more of an intellectual, a trained thinker through learning Gemara. Learning Gemara can train. In other words, when I talk about education as having value to create a well-rounded person who's a thinker, I believe there's value to trigonometry, and I believe there's value to Hamlet. It's just that that value that you can get in a much higher abundance from learning Gemara. So I don't necessarily disagree that there's value to having this GED program incorporated into a high school. You may want to interview the guy who runs that program. I'll send you his way after. But that.
Why would you? So why do you send
your? Let's go back to my 10th
grader.
Excellent. Go back to my 10th grader. My 10th grader. First of all, the clientele that this Masifta takes is extremely selective, and it's safe to say 80-90% of the kids coming out of it will go into chinuch, will go into Klei Kodesh. So those guys will have an opportunity. Now, let's say for a second the money's not there, the situation doesn't work out, and my 10th grader will need to find a panasa one day. So he's an on-the-ball bright guy. It might mean a year in transition. We'll have to take some writing courses. He'll have to take some math courses and get the fundamentals. A guy like that will be able to call up PCCS a year later than what the other guys would have. So I'm setting him back a year to pump out what will be, looks like it's going to be a massive Talmud Chacham. My 9th grader has Yevamos memorized. My 9th grader has learned Yevamos from beginning to end, and you can test on any daf, anywhere in the Masechta. It's something which is mind-boggling to me that when I was in 9th grade, my head was in who knows what, that this is amazing. I'm saying the intellectual feat that my kid has pulled off in 10th grade is phenomenal. So I can't look down at that. Yeah, go ahead.
Rabbi Beda, you should get benched. You have Zeichet to have such a wonderful son. But it's interesting if you this is, of all people here's let me share with you something interesting. Rabbi Yashiv in Kovitz Chuvis in Yeridea, it's in Simon Kuflametes, is asked by somebody asked him if he has to teach his son in Umnis. And this is Rabbi Yashiv, I mean in Yerushalayim, circa 2000.
Sure.
I mean you don't get more right wing than this. what does he bring? He says, because Chayiv Adam Lamrei Umnas, he says, this halacha, he says, Rabbi Chanan Vassaman, in Kovitz Shurim, in Chelik Beisim, in Mem Zayin, he says, was done. Now, Rabbi Chanan is famous for having, you know, the Baranovich was the prize yeshiva in Europe. And Rabbi Chanan was a kanoi by any standards. I mean, anybody who's read, you know, the Igris of what he writes about Zionism. So he was, this is not, Rabbi Chanan was, a real kanoi. So, and what does Rabbi Chanan write? It's in the Kovitz Shurim in Chelik Beis Simon Mem Zayin. Rabbi Yashiv brings it Lalacha. He says, Avada, there's Halacha of Chayiv Adam Lalamed Ben Ayumnes. He says, but that's for the whole world. Right? And really, even the great Nefesh HaChaim, when he says that to Rajbi, that Reb Neroy, you know, that Maniach, Kolum the Shabbainel, Mani Milan B'Yelot Torah, he says, Harbe Asu came V'loy Asu B'Yadon, said in Nefesh HaChaim, writes, it's Harbe, it's in Shar Aleph. When it's for the masses, certainly, Umnes is certainly. He says, and here's the Lashon of Rabbi Chanan, Avalim Roya Adam B'Bnoi, Shu Mukhshur Li Yizgadol B'Torah, B'Zeh Amar Reb Neroy, Ein Milan B'Yelot Torah. He says, V'loy Pligi Reb Neroy. And the Brisker Rav, by the way, says the same thing. The Brisker Rav says, Remeis says a person should teach his son Umnes Kala Nakia. And the same person, and Reb Nuroi says, Eini Melamed B'ni Ela Torah. So the Brisker Rav says, Reb Nuroi and Remeis is the same person. How could they be arguing? The truth is that the Piskei HaRosh brings both Reb Nuroi, Eini Melamed, and he also brings Chayev Al Mamanus. So Reb Elchanan says, because Yechidim, when you see the Elif Nichtas, the Echad Yaitza, so it's Eser or 50, whatever it is, he says that Klal Yisrael needs Gedolim, who, he says, on this there's no, but he says, but for the masses. So my question is not for maybe somebody like your son, who you say is Mukhshar, but when you have literally dozens of yeshivas, you know, they say that 80 or 90% of drivers think they're above average.
Certainly.
Which,
I think I am too, and I know I'm not.
Which is a statistical impossibility, right?
Sure.
90% can't believe they're above the 50%. So my point is, how do we have yeshivas that, as a matter of policy, say, okay, everybody in our yeshiva is going to be a Gadol Hadar, and we are therefore not teaching them English, when the Rebbe in the class knows every class has its top 10%, its top 20%, and it has the bottom 20 and 30%.
Okay, I got it.
Clearly.
Okay,
so how do the Rabbeim in these places,
I'd like the
Mechanchim, yeah, and the parents do something that is both negative halacha, it's negative common sense, it's harming their child, and we're not talking about the pieces that Rebbe Yashiv or Rebbe Chanan talk about, as Rebbe Neroy is speaking about, of those who the Yechidim. That's my question.
Understood. Okay, so I want to hearken back to the email that you got about the individual who's stacking boxes in the warehouse somewhere, and that he's furious at his yeshiva, and that he's furious at his Rosh Yeshiva, correct? We're all familiar with that?
Yes. And okay, sadly, if you speak to Gedalia Weinberger, he won't tell you all like that. He'll tell you many like that.
My years in BMG, and that, you know, when you run a chabura in BMG for those couple of years that I was there, you get a feel for people that are at that stage. You know, I didn't know a lot of 25, 26, 27-year-olds that needed to go out and make a prognosis. I was there with a lot of these guys in the aftermath, and I will say the following. Like I said before, that the well-rounded education that schools that do offer secular studies has a value, even though you'll never use it from a practical standpoint, you'll never use trigonometry, but it has a value that it makes you a more intellectual person, and I continue to argue that Gemara can do that on a much higher level. That said, anybody who is a hard worker, anybody who applies themselves appropriately and gives it their all and gives it their best, it doesn't matter what they're learning in high school. It doesn't matter what they're working on while they're in high school. It could be Gemara. It could be Hamlet. It could be trigonometry. It won't make a difference. And that someone who works hard develops and grows, and that guy who honed his mind during his formative years of 14 to 22 between high school and Beis Medrash, if he was a hard worker and honed his mind, so that all those guys have a very easy time to, you take a year off, you get a GED, you take a year off, you take a computer course, and they figure it out, and PCCS will be very happy to take them once they've gotten themselves trained. The guys who can't make ends meet, who can't figure out a parnassa after the fact, are guys who chilled out the 7 or 8 years, and there are repercussions for that. Those, the good boys in the Sifta who pushed themselves and worked hard, developed and grew into adults who were capable adults in any area, in absolutely any area. You weren't limited to only click like this. So that's what I found. People who are hard workers do well no matter what. People who are lazy, doesn't matter if you have secular studies in high school. If you're lazy in high school for the Gemara, or if you're lazy in high school for your secular studies, you're going to come out without skills no matter what the focus of the Masifta is. So all these Masiftas out there, all these high schools out there that aren't offering secular studies, I don't believe it's fair to say that they're chopping off their arms. If kids do what they're supposed to, they will come out mature, capable, intellectual adults that when push comes to shove and they're 25 and they got to figure out panasa, they figure it out.
I'm talking about the chiyuv l'lamed umnas, to prepare a kid to one day have to work if he's not going to be a kli kaidah.
The world out there.
He's not going to be the echad yaitza. So I'm telling you, the Shulchan Aruch says you do it when he's benoy, when he's a child, when he has the free time, not when he has the obligation. Now, so if we want to argue on the Gemara and say, Chayiv Adam Lamed Benoy Umnes, you know what, you're old-fashioned, let's do it when he's 25, he's smarter then, that's great, but that's not the halacha.
What I'm trying to get across is that nowadays, the way the world is set up, having a bright intellectual kid come out at 18 from a masista who plugged away and worked hard and put in his time while he was in high school, is not, we're not being irresponsible. Because we're not setting them up for failure. Because they are getting skills and they are getting trained in ways that when they hit the workforce, they'll have invaluable skills. They'll have invaluable intellectual skills. That's what I'm trying to argue.
Okay. Rabbi Beda, thank you very much. And you should be continuing Hatzlacha and the incredible job you do in Deal, being Mechanech Bachrim. You should be Zeichel L'Kisrei Shel Taira.
Amen. Thank you very much for having me on.
Kalta. We have on the phone with us from Williamsburg, Rav Moshe Aryeh Kahana. He's the Rav of Meir Balanes, Rosh Machon Zichrein Kahuna. He's a Talmud both of Rav Brus and of Rav Mord Chabek, and he's also a Satmar Chassid. So welcome, Rav Kahana.
Hi, Agitin, how are you?
Oh, good.
So
So we wanted to ask you, we get criticized here on the program for often talking about inyanim that, you know, we'll have Hasidim or sometimes Bachram call and they say, you know, you can't talk about that Barabim. And we've always said that, you know, when you're talking Torah, there's all parts of Torah sort of they learn in yeshiva are considered part of the curriculum. And I'd like to know, as a Satmar Chassid, what is your Kabbalah in this matter?
I think it's fair to say that this is actually a difference of opinion between you know, the Chassidic yeshivas and the yeshivische welt, you know, because I know in the Chassidic yeshivas they will skip certain mamuram, you know, in Chazal, like Sibes Daf Tes and other places, in the yeshivish world, there is no issue. Ich gelernt in Barav Shol Bruzuch in Levrucha, and you know, Ksibes Daf Tes, Space Pesiach, and other mamurim, you know, there was no issue with that. But in the Chassidic yeshivas, I think they will skip. They you know, they wouldn't learn those sigis. And in the Chassidic world alone, you know, there's also, you know, different thresholds. You know, there's some are more strict, some are less strict. So when people say that you shouldn't speak certain issues publicly, you know, it depends where they come from. You know, it's Eli Validivil Kim Chaim. It's just everyone has a different Masorah.
So let me ask you a question. I know that this is sort of like a parva area, but if you look in Shalos HaTshuvos Sam Seifa and Siman Nun Zayin, so he says he was Matziah Shaila and Hilchas Nida Labachrim Gedolim, and by the end of Hilchas Nida, he writes that we finished Masechtas Nida and at my yeshiva, which had hundreds of Bachrim. You see the Maram Shik in Yeridayim and Kuf Pei Dalad writes a long tshuva in Dini Hargasha, Lahuvi Talmidi Habacher Zalman Spitzer. You know, at the Kleisenberger Rebbe in the Shiurim says, you see Ba'olol that you, when you oiskim b'dini arayis v'tahara, that you could meshach shanim rabbis. And he says, v'af pam lo yala b'dayte shum machshava zara. Now, I think the Chassam Sofer is considered sort of semi-Chassidish, right? I mean,
yeah.
And the Kleisenberger certainly considered Chassidish. And these are, you know, big people who said they learned Tolchas Nida, the Maram Shik. I guess, you know, some Chassidim would call him Chassidish, and the Litta he would be considered Chassidish. So it would seem that they did learn, you know, with the yeshiva, Masechtas Nida, and they were Chassidish. Isn't that interesting?
First of all, by the way, Reb Zalman Spitzer was later the item of Chassam Sofer. This is just beside the point. Yeah.
Okay.
One of the differences between the Chassidish and the yeshivish welt, going back to the Guru and Abchaim Volozhiner, was on the concept of the Talmud Torah Keneged Kelim, meaning, of course, Talmud Torah, the limited Torah, is the biggest thing of all. Torah Megineh Matzla, as the Gemara says. So therefore, the Yeshiva Shevelt and the Ashkenazi Shevelt, like you said, the Chassam Sofer and the Maram Shik, you know, they didn't have an issue. They didn't have an issue with learning certain sigyas. Because they felt, since it's Torah Megineh Matzla, and no harm can come out from it, you know, when you learn Torah. In the same sense, maybe the concept of learning philosophy, like the Moirin of Oichem, which was more accepted in the Yeshivish world, I think, and the Chassidish world, and same thing, Shara Yichet, Shara Yichet, you know, I think that even the Chassam Sofer learned Chavisul Shara Yichet. I'm not sure about that. But generally,
Some Seifa said not to learn it with the Bachram.
Oh, not to learn with the Bachram.
As well, as Evan Ezra, just for record.
Okay, so you see, the Seifa did have an issue with that, but I think in the Yeshiva Shavel, you know, was not a problem. And on the other hand, in the Hasidic world, you know, we believe that, of course, not Talmud Torah Keneged Kelam, but we also believe that you have to put your focus and priorities on other things as well. And the other thing besides Torah was Kedush and Tznius. And also Hakira. You know, this is one of the soides of Chassidus is, you know, to put a lot of emphasis on Menepshita and Kedusha, and Tznius is part of Kedusha. So therefore, even though Torah Megidah Matzle, but you know it, yeah, you know, you have to. It's not absolute. Let's call it that. Let's call it, you know, for a lack of a better term, it's not absolute. So that's why you have to also focus on other things as well.
Did they learn in Chumash? I mean, did they learn the parsha of Lot, of Tamar and Yehuda, of Yosef and Eshes Paitifera? Like, what did they do by all these parts of Chumash?
Yeah, I mean, in Chumash we learn everything. Chumash is we learn everything, right? We never skipped anything in Chumash.
Let me share with you a thought, Rav Kahana, that unfortunately it's changing now. That's what I hear. But for thousands of years there was never any alcoholism by Jews, right? And I saw one of the Chachamim writes. He writes, because they knew that you use yayin for kiddush, for havdalah, for a simcha. So when you're taught what something is used like in its proper way, it becomes an education. It becomes a chinuch, and therefore it's a chinuch. And dumb here we use it yes, and dumb nusmun dusnisht, and here we don't use it, right?
Yeah.
So. And unfortunately, they say sadly now, with also because of what's going on in Kedeshim of all things, the Freserei, that is changing. But for thousands of years, so there is a svara that, you know, if you teach something in the proper way, so then we're taught, okay, now we have kelim how to be oichezit, right? You have kelim and oiris. It gives you the kli to hold it. So when we're taught that in yeshiva, you know, in Parshas Arayas and Kedusha, what's yes and what's not, Adarabah. Not only is it not mitamechas v'shalom, but on the contrary, it gives it a context, and it gives it a levush, and it gives it a perspective. Just like, let's say, wine, drinking wine. Like, do you agree? Is that a svara that you hear or not?
About wine. First of all, I wouldn't say that for thousands of years we never drank wine. The Shluch Kudosh says that he says like that. Even though that you see Talmidei Chachamim and Chushev Yidin get drunk, okay, we should not try to copy it. We should not imitate that, you know, because it's not proper. So the Shluch Kudosh says that in his time, there was Chushev Yidin that got drunk, and you know, and
no, that look, the Gemara says a Kohen Gadol, you know, Asa Bavayda, Baltfila Kim. There were, but I'm saying we, you know, when you go to the Irish, it's like you just talk to them. It's like Shikr is a big, like you never heard that in Yiddishkeit. You know, you're not going to be Meshadach with somebody, he's a drunk. When this Geheretz Alchazan people, and I think part of the reason is because we got a chiddach in drinking. And I think there's an argument to be made, like if we get a chinuch in what's kedusha and when and how you talk about arayis and where in halacha their standing is and you talk hilchos need, it explains the fact that there's a need that means that there has to be precious men arayis. So
okay.
I'm just stalling for it to svara to say that on the contrary, by talking about it in the context of halacha, it gives it perspective and it gives it. You know, if we don't have proper boundaries of what is and what isn't, so I think, isn't there an argument to be made by learning Hilchos Nida, by learning Arayas, by learning the sources, this is proper and this isn't proper. This is when we drink wine and this isn't when we drink wine.
Okay.
This is...
Yeah, I get the point. Okay, first let me just add that about this issue, that as I remember in Satmar, we never made an issue not to learn. For example, you asked me about Chumash. We never skipped a pusi because then it's obvious, you know. We tried to just ignore it. So Chumash, you can't ignore it. So therefore, we didn't skip a pusi. But learning, you know, making the shur of Kesibas Daf Tes instead of Kesibas Daf Kuf, you know, this is not obvious. You know, we're going to start
yes,
to see this Pirek Shani, which is normal.
Yes.
So it's not obvious that we are skipping something. Okay,
right.
That's number one. Although I heard that in Square they are more strict about it and they are skipping things.
Hello, they but, take it out of the Chumash. If you look at the Square Chumash, the Psukim are taken out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So so going back to your point about. So the question, you ask the age-old question: what's better for chinuch? Is it better to just be as insular as possible, you know, live in your own room,
yeah.
Or is it better to open up your children? Let's talk about chinuch, about children. To open up your children and prepare them for life, for the world as it is, right?
But only through the window of Torah. I'm not talking about giving your kids internet. I'm talking about when we learn in a Chumash, when you learn in Halacha. So it's through the prism of Torah we prepare our kids for life. So that seems to be the debate, no?
So it's actually two points. One point is if Torah can do any harm, for a lack of a better word, chazushulam. I wouldn't say that. You know, you have to be careful how to express that. But the concept that not everything in Torah is made for Bukhara. That's number one. And then there's another issue which chanoich lanara pidarke gam ki askin yusurimeni. How far do you prepare your child that once he goes out in the world, he should be able to have boundaries. He should be able to have boundaries versus no boundaries at all because he was insular in the younger years, right? That's your question, right? So you're trying to combine an answer which is since Torah in general is you know since Torah in general is Megina Matzla. Plus, Torah is the best way to prepare for the world, right? So this is your argument.
This is what the Klausenberger Rebbe really says,
what
I quoted, yeah?
Okay, but again, there's another, going back to this, of one of these stories of Chassidus. Stories of Chassidus actually means precious. So, in one hand, you're right. You know, you have to prepare your children that when he goes out to the world, he should know, he should have boundaries, right? Because when the boundaries at 25 when he's on the street is different than the boundaries at 15. So you have to prepare him when he's 15. He should be able to live with the boundaries at 25. So the question is, how far do you open him up? Even with Torah, how far do you open him up? The same question can be asked about Kabbalah, right? Kabbalah, there was, you know, the general concept is you don't learn, I mean, except Chabad. Most Hasidim, they don't learn Kabbalah, and it's advised that no one should touch Kabbalah and Sefer Torah until, I don't know, 40 or 35. And even the Gemara says, Ein Darshan Ma'asim Mekuva Eli Liyuchet, right? So there is a concept that not everything in Torah is available for everyone at all the time. The concept of censoring things in Torah is not a new concept. It's an old concept. With Ma'asim Mekuva, you find this in Ma'asim Mekuva, and then you find in the Gemara, in Bruchas, Mani Benaychem in Hagoyan, right? You shouldn't teach your children Tanakh, too much Tanakh. That's how Rashi interprets this, that Hagoyan means Tanakh. Some say a goy means the push pshat for a goy means like to deep learning, you know, to philosophy, thinking philosophical. You know, there's a concept, you know, that your child shouldn't, you know, he should grow up naturally and pure, and then learn as he grows older. He can learn Tanakh, he can learn Kabbalah, he can learn philosophy if he wants. He can you know, things like that. So this is not a new concept. So, you know, the concept of censoring Torah is not a new concept. And going back to what we discussed before, so since Kedusha and Minu Peshitta was a big thing, was one of the Yisoides, so the Chassidish Rebbe figured, you know, that you should be strict on that and insular on that as much as possible.
So Rabbi Kahana, then I guess when I have a program on or a discussion that's a little bit, some Hasidim would not want to listen to with their kids, I should say, look, if you go b'derech haChasidim and you don't talk about, you know, inyan etznius, arayis, etc., ishus, please, this show program is not for you, and close the radio. That's really what I should say. I guess so, to be sensitive to all the different, you know, types of people, right?
Yeah, you should say, this is your Masoira, and obviously, your Masoira is working, right? The Yeshiva Shevelt is as much as Chushev as the Chassidish Shevelt. You know, we have different priorities a little bit, but you know, your way is working, and our way is working. So,
yeah.
this is the Pshat. So if someone has an issue with that, you know, you should close the radio. But as long as you're what you're doing is based on your Masoira, you're 100% right at what you do. And going back to what you mentioned before, how much do you teach your child? How much do you open your child to the world? How much do you prepare your child to the world? And you're right. In some sense, it's better. He should be used since his Bucharish Yuden, that he should have rules in the Bucharish Yuden that will work when he gets older. And on the other hand, the Hasidim, you know, they had a different opinion on that. Their opinion is to make them, to close them up, and then slowly as he gets older, he opens them up a little bit more and more. So.
And is it working? Is it working in the Hasidish world? Like, do you find that, given the fact that you have, you know, iPhones and internet and billboards, etc., that is it working, or is it just being buried under the carpet?
There will always be a few people, and when I say a few, I mean percentage-wise, you know, as much as we grow, it will be more than a few, but I'm only talking about percentage-wise, relative to the general tzibur. So collectively, it's working. I mean, again, Hasidus is 250 years old, and Hasidus is working, Baruch Hashem.
I just mean to say that the walls of the ghetto have come down remarkably in the last 10 years or 15 years because of the internet, right? So
yeah.
do you find that the policy of, you know, not talking and not discussing, et cetera, particularly in the last 10 years, is it working like it worked for the 200 years that preceded it from the Baal Shem? Or do you find that now maybe, even in the Hasidish world, you know, what's the use of high walls if somebody in their pocket could have kol nevala shebaylam in his pocket? So do you maybe find that, you know, discussing things that previously had not been discussed is becoming necessary because the walls have crumbled somewhat?
There's definitely a challenge. That wasn't before, but in the last 250 years, and maybe you can go back to 3,000 years since the Matan Torah, there was also always periods of enlightenment, walls came down, even 150 years ago with the Askula libraries and
I know that, but it was you had to go into a library, you had to go into a Beis Haskala. Here a person could sit b'chadrei chadarim, where aluminium, you know, treifazachin, and you know, and b'chitzainius you wouldn't know anything, and in p'timius there's nothing left. So the question, I find it hard. I'm not 10, but I'm not 100. I don't think the world has seen such an onslaught of availability of media that like there is in the last 10 years or 15 years. It's something new. It's, I mean, the world has advanced more. In the last, a person could have mamish, yeah, you know, something that would need Zion Akiyim and Tfilas to sit on in their pockets. So my question is it working given the change in the environment? And I know Hasidim also have iPhones, right?
Yeah, Hasidim have iPhones, and but most Elch Hasidim use the filter. And but again, the question is if we should open up more since the walls of the ghetto came down. We should open up more in the younger years. So we should teach them.
We should inoculate more.
Inoculate more. We should train them in the younger years more. And part of the training is open them up a little bit and prepare them. Right. That's your point.
And talk to them about these issues. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I'm not saying it's all or none, and I'm not a roof, so I can't. You know, I can't.
And by the way, Rabbi Kahana, neither am I. I'm just achred and learning. That's all. I'm having a discussion. I'm not Chas v'Shalom insinuating or suggesting anything of the like.
Yeah. So in details, I leave it up for the Rabbunim how to, you know, to prepare, how to change a little bit the chinuch. I don't know. I leave it up to them. But generally speaking, on the concept of opening up, preparing versus closing in, yeah, which works better collectively. We're not talking about individuals because there will always be individuals
for the klal.
So which way works better for the klal? I still think that there must be. Let's put it this way: there must be institutions, organizations, yeshivas, kehillas that carry the concept of closing in for the people who feel this works better for them.
Okay.
Let's put it this way.
Okay.
Because let me just add this, because although this nunis yonis, right, with the internet and everything, you can have your library in your pocket versus the library on the street, but this type of nunis yonis, I don't think it's new. It's new in a detail that you can have it in your pocket. But this type of nisyonis that the world is changing and the world, you know, and the world is opening more up. This goes back hundreds of years. The wall of the ghetto came down in Germany and in Europe 200-300 years ago, and then again the askula and books. And books, you know, they had the same question at that time. So the fact of the matter is that the places that kept a certain amount of insularity, for lack of a better term, certain amount of insularity collectively worked better, I think. But that being said, my father, Ulva Shulam, who he was a Holocaust survivor. So Holocaust survivor. Then after the war, he was all over. Obviously, he was in London, and he then learned Torah v'Das. So he told me like this. He told me that a good bucher from Oberland, from Ashkenaz, and the Yeshiva Shoel, which was, like you said, prepared, was much stronger, was much able, more able to fight on his joiners than a bucher from the Chassidish Welt who was not used to the open world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in other words, like they said, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. So that's the point. You know, if same thing with Chabad. If you know they are going all over the world, they're living in all different places, but not too many in. If they make it, they're much stronger. You know, the Nisyonis, they can fight the Nisyon. But again, collectively, I don't think that works collectively.
Can I go off on a side? Chabad and Satmar have for many years been at loggerheads, right? Right.
Loggerheads.
They didn't get along so well, and this is just another. I'm just sticking. Isn't it astonishing to you that the main fundraisers for this Chabad Chassid who was in jail, Rabashkin, were Satmar?
Yeah, because this is one of the things of Satmar Rebbe, which teaches his people, his Sibber, that when it comes to another Yid, when another Yid is in trouble, in big trouble, then all the shittas and everything falls away. And Ahavas Yisrael and Tzedukah in Chesed is one of the Yisoides. One of the sides of Ayit. So.
Beautiful. Let me ask you on another topic that we they don't learn English or math or any Limud Echol, I was told, in Satma in the high school. I'm assuming that's true. I have no way. I mean, I don't have any friends in Satma high school. And my question to you is that given that we know, you know, the Gemara says Chayv Adam Lamed B'nai Umnes Amenim Lamdei Umnes Malamdei Listis, and given the fact that that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins this way Sayin Yeredeya Sayin Erechayim in Hilchas Shabbos and in Hilchas Talmud Torah, etc., and given that poverty is such a great problem in our community, Parnassa, especially for those, I'll tell you something, I'm on the board of Turo. And the reason I'm on the board of Turo is because Rav Aaron's sheet I learned in Lakewood was about college. He used to say, Kol Bayel Yeshuvan. And they learn all kinds of kfir there, and they, the Mishsach, you know, Alamine Taruvis over there. Turo teaches Parnasa B'Kedusha. In other words, it's separate. They don't have kfir there. But they, and I remember meeting a Satmar fellow who worked at, he said he worked in B&H Photo, and he was making $20 an hour, which he said was great until he had his seventh kid. And then he got into Turo, and I remember I met him, and he said it saved his life. He became an accountant. He was able to. But he said, I was lucky. He says, I struggled. I was good with numbers. Given how hard Parnassa is, and given that Chayav Adam Lamed B'nai Umnes, and given that the Gemara in Bava Metzi says, Zubeis Chayayim is to teach them an Umnes, why don't we today, why aren't the Chassidish yeshivas makbid to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic so that when they go out, they could become, if they have to become an accountant, if they have to do books, if they have to write a business letter, they could write a business letter. Why don't they do it lahalacha? And you know, the tour, when he brings us in Shulchan Aruch in Shin Vav, I believe that the Torah's lashon is that Chayav Adam Lamed B'nai Umnes. He says even on Shabbos you could find a thing. He says because if you don't teach him Umnes, he says Digduke Anias Mavir Adam Al Daitei Val Das Kainei. So yeah. Why don't Chassidim who are control their own curriculum create a curriculum that's without kfira and without the things that you don't need, but that when guys leave they should be able to have Beis Chayeyem. The Yerushalmi says, what's the Makar, the Chayev Adam Lamed B'nai Umnes? Because it says V'chay Bohem. And why do you have to have guys struggling and crying and muching their Nisham out? And it's not like between the ages of 13 and 17, the boys are mamish, those extra hour or 2 hours in the afternoon, they're finishing Tzais and Estivis, you know?
The question basically is, on Chanoich L'nar, Al Pidake Gamki Yaskan L'Yusir Memeni, right? What's the right shot of this pusik, right? Let me start from the beginning and you're going to edit it, right? Okay. So let's start again. The basic question is on the pshat of the pusik, chanoich lenarg al pidar, koi gam ki askin le yusr memeni. Right? So Shlomo Melech says that you should mechanech your children al talmidim in a way that will help him and will guide him when he gets older. Okay, when a person gets older, things change. So you need to prepare him in the younger years, that everything you're preparing for will guide him all his life. Okay. So the question is preparedness. How do you prepare, and how much do you prepare? So there's one argument which you make that you need to prepare him and open him up to the world as much as possible and guide him. The other option is that you need to prepare him. Okay, I think that's okay. I'm trying to give you a short answer on a difficult question. Should I start again? Hello?
Yeah, but I honestly, I think we covered that topic so well. Why do you want? What did we miss?
Yeah. Okay.
You said it's it's halan v'alahu, and I accept that. You know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm trying to give you some examples. For example, 150 years ago, the scholar began publishing books and newspapers. Okay. This was a new thing. So in some circles, they just ignored it. In other circles, for example, Belz was the leader in fighting Haskula in Galicia and Poland, with an influence on England as well. So, but Belz Rebbe, what he did, he took the tactics from the Maskilim. He opened a newspaper called the Mechzika Hadas, which is basically the first Orthodox newspaper. And what he did with the newspaper that he put in Devre Torah, Devre Chizik, a little bit of news. So you understand my point? So what he did is he did what they did, but he used it to strengthen his own Kehila. So what I'm trying to say is that sometimes we do new things that wasn't done before because we need to react to the to the general culture. So your point that you need to modify a little bit with the changing times is valid, but it has to be done the right way, and it has to be done only by a Gudel Bisrul, with a purpose to strengthen Yiddishkeit. So this is what I was trying to add.
So can we go back? Let's go to the other question, okay?
Okay, sure. So your question about secular education in yeshivas, right? That's your question. So this question entails a few sub-questions. Okay, number one, there's the law. So we need to make sure that what we do is aligned with the law. And if the law, especially in New York State, if the law is not, contradicts to our Masoira and what we need to do, we need to change the law. That's number one. Particularly in most states, there's no law. The state, especially in the South, the state does not get involved in how you teach your children. But New York State does, and I understand that the state needs the responsibility for the state to make sure that everyone teaches their children properly. So the law must we need to make sure that what the law says and what we do and the Masoira is on the same page. That's number one. Because Dina de Mechisa Dina, and particularly in the Malchus Shel Chesed, we cannot go against the law. That's number one. Number two. The other part of the question is.
No, Adarav, if you want to do the law, you should for sure have English.
Okay.
I'm asking why you don't, not why you do.
Okay, why I don't? So we teach English until 13 years, And we teach English, math, we learn history until the 13 years for boys. Girls obviously, you know, they get educated in secular education until they graduate, until 17 years. And they also teach them some kind of science like biology, even cosmology and the atoms, you know, neutron, protons, electrons, and all those things. That's for girls. So girls get more secular education than the boys. The reason the boys don't is, again, it goes back to two things. Number one is the Messiah. This fight goes back hundreds of years, and so, you know, the Masoira was, when I say we, I mean Satmar, and I can't speak for the Litvisha, and I can't speak for other Hasidus. I can only speak of Satmar. And even more, Satmar, Brooklyn. I don't know what they teach in upstate Satmar or other places. I can speak of Satmar, Brooklyn. So we do teach English, math, and I think geography until the bar mitzvah, and then we don't teach because it's, again, it's number one, it's the Messiah. Number two, we believe that Abuchan needs to learn, you know, his whole focus and everything needs to be in learning from the yeshiva perspective. Now, if a parent, they, you know, they want to teach him at home or whatever, you know, other things, no problem. I don't think someone will make an issue. I know many people who got extra secular education, you know, privately, and I don't think anyone will make an issue. But as far as the yeshiva is concerned, as far as the institution is concerned, we don't teach because it's against the Masoira, and we believe that, you know, Bukhram, the head must be 99% in learning.
And we have a lot of data that's saying that people who don't have a high school education struggle their whole lives to earn a living, and I think the Hasidic community sees a lot of that.
Okay, now I don't have the data about Hasidim, but I do know many people who are very successful in real estate, in businesses like we just mentioned B&H, Adorama, and
hello,
that,
but I,
so the question
know,
is,
I,
let,
I know
let me
know. I know a lot of I know smokers who live till 85. And obese people who live to 85, but if you look at the bell curve of the average, most smokers don't live to 85, and it's not a lot of obese people in nursing homes. You know what I mean? So there's no doubt that there are people who will succeed despite everything. But if you look at the majority of the Hasidic community lives at the poverty level or
you have
some
the numbers?
Place around.
Okay.
And it's a lot of it is like the guy who met me. He says with Al Turo, he said I would have spent my entire life in B&H. With hundreds of guys, because there's no other place for me to go. So it's just common sense, right?
Okay, let me answer the question. So like you said, let's not take an individual example, because for every person that says, you know, I had to go to Turo to make a decent living, I have another person, you know, that didn't went to those, and they're millions, and they're millionaires, and maybe even billionaires. But so let's not talk individual cases. I would really like to know the numbers. In other words, the numbers in Brooklyn by the Hasidic people compared to the general population. Really,
let's take a simple number, okay?
Okay.
Monroe, New York, is the single of all 700 or 800 townships in the United States, is number one leader in percentage of a community taking government programs like, you know, Medicaid, SNAP, Medicare, food stamps, welfare, etc. Number one in the United States. I think that sort of proves the point that without, you know, if you don't know the language and you don't know simple math, you're going to struggle. That's
okay.
Number one in the United States.
Okay.
And I know that there are probably some people who maybe have businesses off the books, on the books. I mean, you live in that community. Poverty is a real issue. Parnas is a real issue. If there's a chiyuv l'lamed l'adam b'nai umnes, and chesidim amakbir on the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins it in a few different places, why aren't they more makbir? And if they control their own yeshivas and they could keep kfirah off the books, and they could keep, you know, the things that aren't necessary, why aren't they mekayim this mitzvah? That's my question.
Okay. So again, I do. Everyone agrees with you, and especially Satmar Rebbe, more than Rabban Kotler, more than the Yeshivisha, that everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, that most people need to go to work. Okay. Koilel, lifelong Koilel is only for the minority, for the Bnei Aliyah, like the Gemara says with Reb Shimon, for the Bnei Aliyah. Most people, the vast majority need to work. Everyone agrees, from a Satmar perspective, everyone agrees with that. Everyone agrees that we need to prepare the boy, the bucher, that when he grows up, he should be able to earn a decent living. Everyone agrees, there's no argument there either. Now, everyone agrees that the decent living in New York State is, the average income in New York State, the median income in New York State is $65,000. Okay, so let's not talk about the median income for a minute. We'll come back to that later. So again, so the only argument, so now you bring me an example from Kirisio. So let me, you're right, but let me fix one point of your example. The fact that Kiris Yoel and I would say all Hasidic communities and even Yeshivish communities are disproportionately on social services, mainly food stamps, Section 8 and Medicaid, not cash welfare. So the reason for that has nothing to do with poverty. In other words, in New York State, New York State median income, the middle income in New York State is $65,000 a year. Someone with a large family, like four or five children, is eligible for those programs even though he's middle income, even though he makes $65,000 like average New York person. So this is not a good example, because even though we will learn English and we'll learn everything in school and we will get a degree, the average will be $65,000-$70,000, like all of the people in New York State. So, and we will still be eligible disproportionately on social services just because we have large families. So this is not a good example. But I do agree with you that KJ has an issue. Based on the 2010 census, the median income in KJ was $24,000, and that's an issue that needs to be fixed. In other words, if KJ brings up the median income to $65,000, the issue is solved. Okay. Now, so you're saying the reason KJ is $24,000 is because they don't know English, they don't know science, biology.
Rabbi Kana, I'm not saying that that's the reason. I'm saying that if you could speak the language and you understand how to do math, right, you have a far better chance of getting the opportunity to earn a living than if you don't speak language and you don't need math. And if you have some basic writing skills, you could write a letter to a vendor. You could read a brochure. You have basic computer skills. So am I saying if everybody there did, everybody would know? But what we're dealing, it would go from 25 to something much greater than 25. I don't know what the number is, but chayiv adam lamed b'nai umnis. The Gemara is saying if you learn an umnis, everybody's going to make a living. It says vayechtal evyon mikala me a kerev aretz, right?
I totally.
But if the Gemara says if you teach an umnis. You know, the biggest school of Parnassus is to do what the Gemara says. So I'm just asking, given that we could do it and you could teach it, but Kedusha, you could teach it without Kfir, and it's a Chiyuv Lalacha, I'm just asking, yeah. And I'm not asking about the Chassidish. I'm only asking about the Chassidish community because you're Chassidish. I'm asking the same thing about the Nun. I think Ramosha Feinstein, who on the Yazdaiti was the biggest Paisik the Western world will ever see till Moshiach comes, his kids went to college, Reb Reuven. Well, his Enoch, to high school. He was very against college, Reb Moshe. He was fire against it. He has Chuvis in Eridei Gimel, some in Pei Beis, Pei Aleph, Pei Beis. But his two yeshivas had a high school in the Darash Moshe, but one of them, he says very clearly that every kid should go to high school. Why? Because it almost falls into the Derech Eretz Kadma L'Torah. If you speak the language, you're more presentable, you have an opportunity. I'm just asking, why do we, at 13, do we sort of, my mashal is cut a child's hands off. What's the logic to it?
Okay, again, so everyone of us knows math. So your only question is English, right? That's the question. Let's focus
it's,
on...
No, it's not the case. I told you, I had Hasidish boys who I spoke to, and they know barely math. If me and you math stopped when we were 12 years old, right? I don't know, you forget math, you this, you that. It has to be a chazara. That...
You're saying that you met Hasidish boys that didn't know that is 100?
Yeah, that's what happened. 5 times 5, you thought was 50. And a boy from who listens to my program, a Chassidish boy,
yeah,
called me up and asked me.
What?
And he's getting married. He said he wants to go into real estate.
Okay.
So can I give him some advice? I said, like, do you know English? So he spoke like a little bit of a broken English. He said, I speak English, like a little broken. I said, do you know any math? He said, I know math. So I figured, let me interview him. So I said, okay, for a joke. I said, how much is 5 times 5? It was quiet. He said, 50. I said,
yeah,
it's not 50. He
okay.
said, 100. Now, I want to tell you, when I lived in Lakewood, I had a yeshiva in my shul that didn't have English. And I asked the boys, I said, do you know how to spell? Yeah. I asked them, okay, yeah. What's your schedule today? Like, do you have any English? I said, how do you spell schedule? So he says, S-Q... And I know a Q needs a U. He's selling schedule. And I said, if you're not the Echad Yotza and you ever have to do anything and you can't write a sentence, what's the thing, right? What's the mahalach? I think it's the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara and the Achrayim and the Rishonim say it's Neged HaTorah. So why do we do it? I'm asking a Shaila. That's all. Not just,
okay,
just you.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So I do agree with you 100% that we need to know English properly and we need to know math properly. When I was in yeshiva, I would say when was it? 30 years ago, they teach English and they teach math. And by the way, my English is a little bit broken because I didn't, I didn't have the dilt to go to English. I only went, let's not talk about me personally. So, but the friends of mine that I know, who went to English and they took it seriously 2 hours a day for English and math, they know, proper English. I don't know. The truth is, I don't know what they teach today.
Let me tell you, I had on Reb Gedalia Weinberger, who runs PCCS in Lakewood.
Yes.
Which takes Bachrim, Chassidisha, Litvish, not Bachrim, young Goliath, who are coming out of Kail. And they teach them a parnasa. They teach them computers, insurance, accounting, whatever it is. And he said, and he's on the program, he said, we stopped taking guys who didn't go to high school because they're so far behind, we can't teach them anything. So it seems what we learn until we're 12 or 13 isn't enough.
No, I think, I'm not sure. Like I said, when I was in yeshiva 3 years ago, all my friends who took English seriously, and they studied for 2 hours a day, they knew English and math. They did. And even myself, which I didn't take it so seriously. I knew math, English not English I didn't, but I knew math.
Okay.
Very well.
So
I agree with you.
We're basically agreeing. It's just a question: at what point do they know English or math?
Right. So I do agree with you that English and math is important. It's not just important. Satmar Rebbe said that we should learn English and math, and it's actually part of the Masoira, it's part of the tradition, it's part of Menschheit, it's part of the law. I mean, there's no excuse not to do it. I won't argue that. But again,
well, Rav Kahana, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Not a roof, I'm just saying my opinion. So
yeah.
Why not?
Well, Rav Kahana, thank you very much for sharing your time with us. We have on the phone with us from New York, Rabbi Moshe Brady. He's a director of Limudei Yisrael Institute, a Talmud of Teradas, a Musmach from Rabelski Zuchar and Levracha, both Yairi Yairi Yadin Yadin. He was a Chavar and his Bezdin. Welcome, Rabbi Brady.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on.
Could you tell us what is the Limudei Yisrael Institute? What is its goal? What is its Weltanschauung?
Okay. Limudei Yisrael Institute started many years ago as a Talmud by Rebelski, and I was learning most of the day. I needed some parnassus, so I became an English teacher in the local yeshivas in Brooklyn. And over the years, I stayed there for many years, learning and working as a teacher. And through the years, I realized that there are numerous problems with the general studies departments in yeshivas, and I decided to try to do something about it. So this was the impetus to start the New Day Israel Institute. And the New Day Israel Institute focuses on three broad topics, three broad areas. The first is to make a Tayyidic secular curriculum. And the second is to make kosher textbooks and workbooks for the yeshivas. And the third is to train young light and the chanchim to become teachers. So we are working on all those three aspects simultaneously.
What's wrong with today's What's wrong with today's curriculum?
Well, I found as a teacher that a lot of the Talmidim, they have like almost no shaychus to the connect. They don't connect at all to the material. The history seems to be disconnected from their lives. The science is completely almost unconnected in any way to them. And besides of that, I mean, besides of the lack of meaning to the Bachrim and to even like older boys, it also has a lot of problems with it. There's a tremendous amount of hidden and sometimes not so hidden kfira and apikarsis in it, and it's like turns a lot of Bachrim off, a lot of people, you know. I just met somebody. He told me that he loved to learn in the morning. In the afternoon, he came. He was like upgekilt. His whole Yiddishkeit was weakened when he had to learn all these topics that were connected with what he was learning in the morning. So the curriculum needs to be revamped, not to be changed because it's not our abilities, it's the state's prerogative to what they want to teach, but we have to do it, we have to make it matim, we have to make it connect to the Bachrim, to the youth of today, and a lot of that can be done through a Tayyidic lens, and that took
over.
How do you
do that? You publish your own textbooks, what do?
Well, that's part of what we're doing. We just published the first Tayyidic no problem earth science textbook. It's available today. It has about 80% of the New York State curriculum in it, and it has no problematic parts to it at all. And Adirabba, we put Hashem's name on every single page. That people should see that the Rabban Shalom made the world and made the science and made the planet. And more than that, we connect, and it's part one of the things that we're doing is making a PowerPoint. And the PowerPoints have connections throughout, interspersed throughout the PowerPoint, we have connections to Torah ideas and hashgafa like Shar Bechina hashgafa, like Avigdor Miller would like us to teach it. So we don't just learn it the way the Goyim wants to learn the material, but we do it in the way that the Rabban Shalom wants us to learn science, to see his Mefloyes Hadayre and to recognize that he is the manig of the Bria. And the same thing goes for science, the same thing goes for history, and it can be done in almost every single topic throughout. So that makes it very meaningful to the Bachrim. So besides making it kosher, but we also have a big push to make a meaningful curriculum through PowerPoints and that type.
Now, do you think boys should be learning secular studies in high school, or should they be skipping high school? What's your opinion about that?
That question is not up to me. It's, you know, this has been a machlokes rishonim, not, you know, it's not a machlokes of today. This is a machlokes going back 1,000 years already. Should we be studying secular studies or not? And there was the daily rishonim that said no, and there was daily rishonim that said yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, already, you know, it's not for me to say what should be.
When you say Gedaila Rishaynim, when you say Gedaila Rishaynim said no, who would you be referring to?
If you look in the Rajba, there was a big machlokes in about 800 years ago.
About studying science.
This issue. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just science, because in the curriculum that they studied in those days and was you had to study Aristotle, and Aristotle believed in an eternal world. So that was clear. There was also a lot of.
But what about things like reading, writing, arithmetic? What's your opinion about that?
Yeah, there's a tremendous value to those materials. There's no question about it. It just has to be done in a targeted way, in a beneficial way for people to take something out of it.
So how many yeshivas? When you print your material, how many yeshivas do you think will be using it?
We hope everybody.
And when will it be printed? When will we be able to get it?
It's available today. Any yeshiva that wants it. We have a couple of yeshivas that are actually using some of the material that I've been publishing already for about 5 years. Regents Review books that were kosher. I did it with Rebelsky.
And who uses it? Which yeshivas use it?
We had almost every yeshiva in Brooklyn has Bachem who used it for the regions. And Darche Taira used part of my biology that I worked with Rebelsky on how to present the problematic parts according to Rebelsky. And we have Shari Chaim in Slovakia using it. My book, the one that was just published, and it's a Torah alternative to what's being taught outside. Gedolim has been a calling for already close to 200 years, 150 years for change of the textbooks and it should be kosher. And about time that it should be done.
Rabbi Moshe Brady, director of Limudi Yisrael Institute, who is printing, publishing kosher textbooks without kefir in them, biology, history, science. Rabbi Brady, thank you very much for your.
I just can add one more point. One more point. It's actually two more points. There are parts that are problematic as well. So for those, I had the schuss to learn by Rebelsky. I had the opportunity to publish little pamphlets and regents review books that were kosher, the way Rebelsky felt that they should be taught, and now we're publishing, according to Rav Aaron Feldman Shlita, publish books that deal with the problematic content in a Targic way. And the truth is, one more point is that it's very, very crucial that there should be B'nai Torah who are teachers. Without the Nektar of teachers, it's going to be very difficult to have any of these changes implemented, because if you have a secular teacher, how could he bring Tyredic secular studies to the Bachim? He doesn't know what it is. So we really need the Nektar as teachers. And if there's anybody who's interested, we offer free training for Ingalait and the Chamchem to become teachers.
Rabbi Brady, thank you very much for your shtadlus to have a kosher achenach.
Thank you very much.
Kol tov. Take care.